So welcome back to our series about licenses and copyright. Today we will be talking about the GNU licenses, just an overview. So let's take it away.
Exactly. So GNU licenses or strong copyleft licenses in many cases. So the GNU licenses come from the Free Software Foundation. That was founded by Stallman, which we covered in an earlier episode. And that foundation also funds the GNU project, which is a source of many of the GNU tools for user space in Linux. So that's why it's sometimes referred to as GNU Linux, because the non-kernel parts come from this project. The Free Software Foundation defines four freedoms that we've also talked about. So the freedom to run the program for any purpose, the freedom to study the program and change it to your wish, the freedom to redistribute and make copies of the program, and the freedom to improve the program and release your improvements, so to redistribute a modified version to the public. And this is sort of the basis for the licenses. So the GNU licenses are triggered by distribution, and there are a number of different GNU licenses. The distribution varies a bit in between them, but it's important to recognize that the GNU license doesn't really apply when you're just having the code at home, but it's when you actually distribute it to a neighbor or user or a fellow developer. And basically there are four variants of the GPL. It's the GPL itself, the GNU public license, which is a strong copyleft license. The LGPL, which is the lesser or the library GPL. The Affero GPL is interesting because it redefines distribution to sort of address the problems with open source or free software being distributed as a service. And then we have a documentation license, the GFDL. But let's look at these in more detail. So you might recognize these diagrams. So basically you have your software, which is a piece of software you write that depends on a piece of licensed code or the work. I think it's defined as in the license. And then you can make modifications to the licensed code as well. So GPL is really easy because that means that if you depend on the licensed code, your code is also GPL or has to be, and your modifications also has to be GPL.
What does the arrow down mean in this case? Why is it from your software to license code?
So let's say that the license code is a library of some sort. Give me a good example of a GPL licensed library.
Libc.
Libc has an exception, I think.
Ah, damn it.
No, but it's a library, and your software uses that library. So the license code is probably an SO file on your hard drive, and your modifications is code changes that you use to compile a new SO file, while your software is just your binary that then links to that SO file.
And the modifications in this picture is the modifications to the library which you did.
Exactly. So you fix a bug or you change the behavior slightly. And that is obviously GPL because that's a change to the license code. And that's really the difference to the LGPL because that I personally think that the library GPL, it says more about it than the lesser GPL. Because if the license code is a library, what we want to get out of that is that the modifications or improvements to the library itself should be distributed further and sort of be to the benefit of the community, while your software that depends on the library isn't as important for the community, so it is allowed to stay closed source or be open source with different license or whatnot. The limitation.
I think a good way to think about how to pronounce the LGPL is it is not the lesser GPL, it's the lesser general public license. It's not as general as the GPL.
Sure, yeah. And then moving on to the more the even stronger,
the I more would say, GPL.
The more GPL. No, the even stronger license, I would say, in my view, the AGPL. So Affero Inc. was a company founded by a guy called Henry Poole in 2001. And he wanted to solve the issue that if you take a GPL-based software and use it in your on the server side, that doesn't trigger distribution because it's still on your machine as you as a developer. So the user has no freedoms from that. The code does not have to come along or be distributed along with mm-hmm. the service, as there is no code distribution. So what has been added to AGPL is that when you're interacting with it remotely through a computer network, you also must have an opportunity to receive the corresponding source code using a network server at no charge. And then it also says through some standard or customary means and so on. So you can't really just fax it over or something. It needs to be convenient. But it basically expands on the notion of distribution, I would say.
But does it then, in comparison to the LGPL and GPL, does it cover more? So your software, like you had in the both were green, your software and the library were needed to be GPL. Does this mean in AGPL also that your software needs to be AGPL?
It needs to be GPL at least.
I see.
So basically, when you're using a GPL version software to build a server-side component and then expose that function to an end user, that isn't considered distribution because the binary still runs on the server. And what this changes is really to expand on the notion of where the user can be and where the GPL triggers. These are also a bit tricky because in GPL v2, there was an additional section, while in GPL v3 and AGPL v3, this is a separate paragraph, so to speak. It has its own number, and GPL and AGPL refer to each other to be compliant, while the version 2, it was sort of a patch to the original GPL v2.
I see. One of the bigger known problems is, for example, when Amazon offers different software as a service where they don't pay for the software. So it there is no money exchange, obviously, because they can just use the GPL software. But also this makes it impossible for the companies to make money on it by hosting this software for themselves and making money out of it. So it kind of became a tool for companies to also enforce things like this to be able to themselves host and offer services, which they then release as AGPL instead of someone else just doing it and keeping all the changes.
Exactly. I we're drifting towards Common Clause, which I think is a topic for a completely different episode. But yes, I mean, this would probably not be possible for someone like Azure or Amazon to just incorporate in their cloud offerings, especially since GPL is a strong copyleft license. It would affect that their integration into their system would also be AGPL at the end of the day.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. I guess the problem for the companies that wanted to go down the path of Common Clause is that it I think this is incompatible with sort of an open core model. That's something we can talk more about as well. But basically, you have to distribute everything and not only a selected subset of the functionality.
Okay, yes.
So moving on to the last one, we have the GFDL. So the GNU Free Documentation License, which is a copyleft license for documentation. And there are a number of things that are familiar from the GPL licenses. So the derivative works, what you, your modification, so to speak, must be made available under the same license. You need to copy the full license text and the copyright notices and so on. You cannot use DRM with GFDL based documents, which means that they need to be copyable and editable. And all previous works must be attributed. One of the challenging thing is that you can also mark sections as invariant, so that you cannot change them. So basically, you can have like a chapter in your book that nobody may change, even though it's copyleft licensed, and everything else can be modified. And this makes it incompatible with the GPL, which is kind of interesting. Now, the GPL is for code and this is for documentation, so it's not a big problem, but it's still interesting to me that they are incompatible.
How many sections can you mark as invariants? I mean,
I don't think there is a limitation. To be honest, I don't know, but I don't think there is a limitation. So, I mean, if you want to mess with people, you could possibly mark the entire thing as invariant then.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. Then you end up with like a, well, open source license instead of a free license.
Yeah, or even...
Yeah, but since because it's not software...
It's not even open source. It's... You can, it's a share alike license, but you can't modify anything, so to speak.
Oh, yeah. It's like shareware.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like peek at the source code license.
Yeah.
But they also have a clause which is interesting where you can see the documentation sort of enters the physical world, where they define that if you distribute more than 100 copies, you need to provide a machine-readable copy. And this machine-readable copy need to be editable and sort of useful to do the modifications and redistribution. So I would say that this even implies if you distribute more than 100 PDFs, for instance, since they are hard to edit and sort of use to create the derived work.
Do we know the date of when this was created? Because it's kind of... I mean... In today's world, it seems like outlandish. Like, if you have more than 100 copies, you need to do this and that. Is it a really old one, or is it something newer?
I actually don't know. Okay. And I think it's the license I left out from the timeline.
Oh,
unfortunately.
Okay.
but let's add in a little cliff there when we explain that. I can check it. But yeah, it also comparing this to other licenses, this one is very similar to the Creative Commons buy and share alike. I don't think it's as explicit in the whole DRM stuff and invariants and so on. But from a practical perspective, it's very close. So you need to attribute and you need to redistribute under the same license, so to speak. And in my... experience, the Creative Commons licenses are more common for documentation style contents. Mm-hmm. But coming forward to the actual timeline, I mean, we've spoken about the history of this, so we know it's from the 80s. So GPL version 1 was released in 89. Then in 91, a clause called Freedom or Death was added, section 7 to the GPL v2. It basically means that if you are restricted by other laws, so that you cannot satisfy all the obligations of the license, then you may not license the code, basically. So if you happen to live in a jurisdiction where you can't use the code for any purpose, for instance, then tough luck, then you live in the wrong place, so you can't use the code at all. So that's, I would say it's a clarification or a reaction. I don't know the exact background to adding it. Along with that, the LGPL v2 was also added. And then in 99, the LGPL was, let's call it, clarified. So they added a section 6b that explicitly says, I mean, we had the boxes, your code, depending on the licensed work. And they say that a suitable shared library mechanism is an acceptable way to do this. This was sort of implied in the 2, not .1, but in 2.1 it was clarified. Technically, you can even fulfill the LGPL while doing static linking, but then you need to distribute your object files so that somebody else can do the linking, because the license doesn't really care how the linking is happening. It's just that the user should be able to change and update the GPL part of the work, so to speak.
This is, I think, how Apple goes around the whole problem, because they only have static linking in their iOS. There's no shared what is the other one called? Shared linking? No.
dynamic linking.
Yeah, dynamic linking. Thank you.
Yep.
And this is one of the things I guess they use.
Exactly. Be able to do it. So what you have to do is you need to create a library out of your the proprietary parts of your code. You can strip it from debug symbols and so on, but it needs to be possible to link it to a new version of the LGPL version of the library. And then looking forward to the 2000s, in 2007, GPL v3 came along, which is a completely different license, I would say, to some respects. It defines how to arbitrate license infringements and so on. But it also covers some things that are big enough for us to dive into in separate sections, like patents clauses, digital rights management, and TVOization. But these are really big topics that we need to dive into individually.
I had a quick look in the Wikipedia, and the GFDL, just to add to the timeline, was released as a draft in 99. And then the latest version 1.3 is from 2008.
Cool. It could be worth
it. Some to say that we should call it digital restriction management.
Yeah, I mean, the DRM abbreviation is really unfortunate. It's also part of the graphic stacks and Linux systems and so on.
I know.
There is one more thing that we need to be aware of. So since there are different versions of the GPL, you can also license under GPL version something and later. This is usually entered as GPL v2 plus, for instance, or GPL v3 plus, which means that you allow the usage of a later version of the GPL, which means that you trust the FSF to actually release sane versions of the GPL. You really put all your assets in their lap by doing so. Another thing around the FSF, and this is especially when you want to put your code into the GNU project explicitly, that you can also sign over the copyright and assign it to the FSF. And the background to this is that it's only the copyright holder that can sort of go after someone infringing the license. So either you have to defend your own license and sort of pay for lawyers and go to court and all of that, or you can assign the copyright to FSF before the infringement happens, and that will allow the FSF to defend the license.
So it needs to be before it happens, not afterwards. Okay.
That's the way I understand it. I mean, otherwise it's... Otherwise you sort of change the license holder retroactively.
Because it's the copy you distributed that counts.
I see. Okay.
I would guess. I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah. I have to add that myself as well.
As far as I remember, Linus Torvalds put GPL version 2 and he didn't trust for the plus. And he seems to be quite happy about it because it doesn't mean that Linux itself can be distributed under version 3, which he seems not to like.
Exactly. There are some different views there, definitely. So the Linux kernel is GPL v2 without the plus. It's only version 2, and it's on purpose.
So if you are thinking about doing this plus thing, think twice, because it might mean the same thing which it meant to Linus, where he really was happy that he didn't trust the FSF.
Yeah, I mean, the FSF can change the license, and the FSF is a big organization with multiple members. So it's, you don't know where they are heading. But that's a quick introduction to the various GNU licenses. We will dive into them going forward as well. If there's any specific thing you want us to bring up, just ping us in the comments or on Twitter, and we can do that early.
Okay, then thank you all, and see you soon.